Top Line. What you say next can change your world. I'm Sigal Shoham. I'm a mediator and trainer for nonviolent communication with Bay and BC. I will be hosting the show today. We're experimenting with a new format. Mickey Kashtan, our conflict coach, is here in the studio. She's going to be working with conflict situations with our role players. I'll be watching along with you and asking questions about what happens. Joining us in the studio as role players are Allie Miller, a therapist and NVC practitioner, and Lucy Perry, an NVC trainer and Bay NVC Leadership Program graduate. The theme of this month's show is social change, so we'll be looking at all kinds of challenges people face when they try to influence how society operates. We'll also have an interview with a special guest, Michael Nagler, an internationally recognized nonviolence expert and author. Let's take a look at our first scenario. It's called, It's Supposed to Be Nonviolent. We have Allie playing Dana and Lucy playing Angela. They're both at a protest. Mickey.
Thank you. So Dana, I understand this protest arose from a meeting about the student fee hikes, and that there was a decision to have this be a nonviolent protest.
Right.
And now I understand there's some upset about Angela's group coming and having a different approach, and they're turning garbage cans and loud voices and about to break some windows, and you're upset about this. So let's see how you handle it, and let's see if I can help you with that.
Okay. What are you doing? It's supposed to be nonviolent.
I'm doing what needs to be done if we're going to have real change.
What, it seems like what you're doing is just causing trouble, and then this, you're going to ruin the whole thing.
Well, some people need to cause trouble in order to make something happen around here. You know, that's just what it takes.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it takes. I think nonviolence is what it takes, and I'm really wanting you guys not to be doing this anymore.
Well, I didn't sign up for your program. We did not agree to your rules, you know? It's not just about following the rules. Something has to be done.
We're doing something.
I don't think what you're doing is going to work. I think what we're doing is really going to make a statement.
Thank you. I don't have a sense that either one of you is getting closer to understanding each other, right?
I don't.
And it's getting more and more polarized between the two of you. Yeah? Do you feel that? So in a moment, we'll come back to this and see what we can do with it.
Great. Thank you, Mickey. Conflict Hotline is a live call-in program about the common challenges we face in our relationships, at home, and around the world. It's about how we can bring awareness and skills to face the situations more successfully. We're an all-volunteer effort with no budget, and we are affiliated with Bay Area Nonviolent Communication, Bay NVC. You can call us from anywhere around the world at 510-848-5483. You can call with any conflict you have in your life, such as...
It could be a situation with your children or with your parents.
Or it can be something with coworkers or a situation that you have with friends.
Or it could be an issue going on in your neighborhood or in your love life.
Now let's see what happens when we bring some consciousness and skills to Dana and Angela's situation.
So I understand that you are committed to nonviolence.
Yes.
So let's see what that means in this moment. I get a sense that you have a strong commitment to nonviolence in terms of the protest.
Yes.
Let's see what nonviolence looks like when you're facing a protester who is not committed to nonviolence.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing you doing is trying to convince her that your way is right.
Yeah.
And I don't have any sense that that's going to reach her. Have you felt any sense of reaching her?
I don't know what's going to reach her. I don't think anything's going to reach her.
And isn't that similar to your sense that nothing is going to reach the UC Regents or that nothing is going to reach the system or something like this? So there is some way that the fundamental premise of nonviolence is how do we find the human connection, stand up for what we believe in, and at the same time, be open to the people who are holding some different view or different strategy or are doing things that we don't like. So you with me that that goes to the heart of that. So now what that means in the context of nonviolent communication is trying to grasp what it is that matters to her and see if you can give her a sense that what is such a burning passion in her is something that you can understand instead of arguing with it. You willing to give it a try?
To try to connect with her, what's happening for her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because even under situations like this, if you try to express yourself and the other person is not hearing you, you can shift it by hearing them.
Okay.
Let's try from the top.
Okay. So you want me to say the same thing I started with?
At the beginning, okay. and then see what she says in response, and then how you might react to that differently.
Okay. Hey, what are you doing? It's supposed to be nonviolent.
I'm doing what we need to do to make some real change around here.
So it's very easy to hear what's important to her.
Making real change.
Yeah.
So are you, can I make a guess?
Sure.
Are you feeling really desperate because you so passionately want things to be different?
Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to do something, right? We can't just sit and take what's handed to us. We have to speak up for what's important.
Because you care so deeply, so much about changing things.
Yeah, access to education, you know? It's a right that everybody needs access to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if you're feeling ever so slightly more connected to her.
Way more connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because my guess is that when you get to this level, what she cares about
is what I care about.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between you is only at the level of method, of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how you're feeling in this exchange.
I feel much like we're almost on the same side. Mm-hmm. We just see things a little differently.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? Do you want to keep going and see how far you can go with that?
Okay. So, yeah, so it sounds like you really care about access to education, which is what we care about too. So
yeah.
We're on the same page with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, there is another piece that I heard that I haven't heard you reflect, which is not only that she cares. My sense is that part of the feeling desperate that she has is because she feels alone. In terms of what she thinks would be effective.
Mm.
That all of you, from her perspective, are doing this wishy-washy thing that's not going to do anything.
Okay.
And where I hear that is in the word, somebody's got to do something. Because
mm-hmm.
you guys aren't. She didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear that?
Yeah.
So see if you can try to connect with her about that.
So when you see us, you know, doing this in a nonviolent way, I'm wondering, like, are you feeling really frustrated because you really want a sense of, like, that we're all in this together, like, actually making a difference together?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want some respect for the fact that some of us are really willing to take risks for what's mm-hmm. important.
So I'm hearing you want respect and some sort of acknowledgement for how you're really, like, you're really risking here.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for you guys to come in and say that you know what's best and you tell us what to do, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not cool.
Yeah, so wanting some, like, shared sense of defining how this is going to go as opposed to you being told what the rules are.
Yeah, I mean, who put you in charge of the rules?
Yeah, so, like, equality. Wanting a voice?
I'm hearing something more like the autonomy to choose how she's going to attend to what matters to both of you, instead of being told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah?
Is that it?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to jump in. As a listener, I'm getting nervous. You know, if I'm on Dana's side, I'm getting pretty nervous about where this is going. It sounds like Dana's going to cave, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wanting some reassurance that this isn't just going to go one way or another here.
Yeah, this in a moment like this, this often comes up, a little nervousness
mm-hmm.
about, you know, how far do I go? And so two things that I want to say about that. One is that I don't have yet a sense that full connection has been established. There's still a little more here before this person will settle.
Mm.
And there's a kind of a settling that happens that then you can say your piece. That's number one. Number two, I really value what you're saying because a lot of people kind of like disappear into empathy and forget about bringing themselves into it too. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that just one or two more lines, and then Angela is likely to be willing to hear.
I'll try and have some faith.
And also because you're not doing it, you're not feeling what Dana is feeling, which is more and more connection, right? Mm-hmm. That it doesn't have to. There's kind of like a suspended animation, where it's about connection and not about who's going to win. Once there is connection, then you don't have to have winners and losers.
I'm ready to see it happen.
I hope so. We'll see.
So we were with autonomy, right? That you're really valuing autonomy.
Yeah.
And wanting a choice about how you express your passion and your concerns.
Right, to do what I think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, to have choice about how you express yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand that, right? I mean,
I can understand it, but I have some concerns about the way you're expressing yourself. I'm wondering if you have space to hear that.
I'm willing to listen.
Should I go with it?
So when what I hear in there is you have a window, mm-hmm. and it's not big. Mm-hmm. And the smaller the window, the more important it is that you say what's most important quickly. Instead of like trying to build a case.
Yeah.
Which will lose her in 2 seconds, is like, what is at the most heart of it for you?
That I want people to take us seriously.
Okay.
And I'm afraid how the media is going to portray this protest if you guys are, you know, toppling over garbage cans and crashing windows.
And because she is also habituated to arguing, if you leave it like this, she will argue with you. Whereas I think what you want is to know if she's hearing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my concern. Do you hear what I'm saying? Can you tell me back what you hear me saying?
Yeah, I think that you're concerned about how it's going to look in the media.
Yeah, I mean, not just how it's going to look, but how it looks and then how that'll impact how, you know, we're perceived and how... I mean, basically, I want us to actually make a difference, you know, and I want UC to get the message that this isn't okay. And I'm afraid that we're just not going to be taken seriously if you guys continue doing this.
Right. Well, and I'm afraid we're not going to be taken seriously if we don't, you know, take some action here.
So now I want to fight.
Now you want to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel heard.
Okay, because you said it a second time and you didn't ask her to reflect.
Right.
And so then she went back to arguing.
Okay.
If you want to create the connection, then you navigate the conversation. Anytime you let go, she's going to pick it up in the familiar style.
Okay.
So you need to be really forceful here.
Okay.
Nothing about being nice. Just be really forceful.
Okay.
In what you want back from her that will move you towards connection.
Okay. So I'm really wanting to know that you're understanding what I'm saying. Would you be willing to say back what you've gotten so far about what's important to me?
Yeah, I think I'm understanding what you're saying. I think you're saying that this movement is going to be more effective if it looks a certain way in the media.
So I'd like to just clarify, like, what's underneath the
look. You see, this is why it's so important, even though it's awkward and uncomfortable to ask people to reflect, it's so important because then we see, when there's so much of a rift between you, it's unlikely that she will hear you the first time.
Yeah, right.
So that this way you get the feedback and you can tell her, thank you, and now I see what needs to be clarified.
Okay. So thank you. I'd like to clarify what's underneath that concern about how we look to the media. Do you feel some openness to hearing?
Sure.
Okay. So when what my real concern is that we actually impact, you know, UC's decisions. And I'm afraid that they're just gonna, you know, dismiss us if they see this kind of behavior. And I'm wondering now if you'd be willing to reflect back what you're hearing me say.
That you really want to impact the university's decisions, and you're afraid that that they're not going to take us seriously if they see certain kinds of behavior.
Yeah, thank you. And that then change won't happen.
So I want to pause because one word that I heard was very significant for me, and that word was us. In the reflection, she said they're not going to take us seriously, rather than they're not going to take you seriously. Mm. So in a way, in that word, I'm hearing that some connection and togetherness has already been woven without even... Did you notice that you said that?
No, I didn't, but...
But you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want to pause here because I don't think that in the context of this show we can actually bring this to full resolution. I just am noting that in and through doing this, you got to hear her and feel more connected with her, and now you're getting to her to feel more connected with you, aren't you?
Yeah.
There is more of a sense of usness, and over time, you're unlikely to turn this around in the moment. Mm-hmm. But over time, you can come to a place of more connection where you possibly might strategize together.
Mm.
Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I feel like the potential is there for more dialogue. It might not resolve itself in this interaction, but we can hash some things out.
I'm wondering if at the end of this, you feel a tiny bit more respect for her.
Definitely, yeah.
She's no longer this wishy-washy, doesn't get anything.
Right. Yeah? She's serious.
Yeah. Anything you want to say in conclusion?
Can I say something that I liked about what happened?
Yes.
Okay. I really appreciated your coaching around like making the request and like kind of staying in control of the conversation. It felt like it was connecting me with power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that that happens because there's such a myth that nonviolence is passive.
Mm-hmm.
And nonviolence can be so powerful, like you just felt.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that stands out to you?
I really appreciated that you pointed out the use of the word us. I mean, I wasn't even aware, but it did point to a real shift in how I was feeling.
And from the point of view of the audience, is there anything you'd like to add?
I got those different things of holding the power and the shift versus the S. I had a little bit of nervousness around whether or not this conversation could really take place at this protest. So I would, you know, if we were to do it again, I'd love to see how she might do it if she couldn't actually have the conversation.
Yes, if you can't have the conversation, it all turns internal.
Right.
It's how do you hold things that you don't even have access to changing inside yourself. And I bet anything that some of that will come up in my conversation with Michael after we take a break.
And that's just what I was going to say. I bet that we'll get more into some of those internal conflicts later. Meanwhile, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Nikki will be interviewing our special guest, Michael Nagler. Thanks. Welcome back to the Conflict Hotline. Welcome to Dr. Nagler. Dr. Nagler is Professor Emeritus of Classics and Comparative Literature at UC Berkeley, where he founded the Peace and Conflict Studies program. For 25 years, he taught popular courses in nonviolence, meditation, and a seminar called Why Are We Here? Great Writing on the Meaning of Life. He's an internationally recognized nonviolence expert and the author of several books, including award-winning Search for a Nonviolent Future. He has consulted for the U.S. Institute of Peace and many other organizations and is the founder and president of the Meta Center for Nonviolence Education in Berkeley, California.
Thank you very much, Sigal.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Mickey. How are you?
It's great to have you here.
Thanks so much. Very good to be here.
And thank you for sending us that scenario. It was very lively and fruitful, and I'm curious if you have any reflections as you were watching it.
It was lively and fruitful, and it's also very real.
Mm-hmm.
And it touches on something that I think is probably the biggest problem in the progressive movement, the peace movement today, which, I mean, I don't want to use a fancy word like self-purification, but we have to get our message clear. Needless to say, this actually happened. I was consulting with the students around this whole issue. But it takes us back to Seattle, 1999, and it takes us so back to the Haymarket riots and on and on. And I think the one thing that Dana could have said that she didn't reach out to is, look, I'm not saying that my philosophy is right and yours is wrong. All I'm saying is we'll never know which one of us is right, which one of us is wrong, unless we get to play it out in a clear, consistent way. So whenever you have a movement that's mostly nonviolent but partly violent, it will be perceived as a mishmash at best or as a violent movement at worst. That's part of the training of human consciousness and human attention in this culture. So I've even made up a law, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but my hope is to get the Nobel Prize, and to do that, you have to be the author of a law, right? So Nagler's law goes NV plus V equals V.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not always absolutely the case in the mathematical sense. Someone pointed out to me that although the flotilla did erupt in violence on the Mavi Marmara when it was when the IDF soldiers, commandos, were landing on it, there was some violence there. Still, the overall impact of that event was startling and eye-opening, and you could say it had a nonviolent effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that this is absolute, but I would say that suppose those sailors, those passengers on the Mavi Marmara had not reacted violently, I think the impact of that episode would have been much greater by virtue of being clearer, by being one thing.
So what do you think is the thing that makes nonviolence so powerful?
I actually believe that nonviolence draws its power from negative energies in a funny way. If I'm faced with a situation and some anger comes up, and or fear, and sometimes greed, I have learned to look upon that as just pure, just energy, without any moral, you know, connotation to it. Now, if I convert that anger into something creative and positive, that very same energy, which was quite considerable, I mean, look at the world, you see how much damage is done by anger, the same amount of good could be done by compassion, sympathy, whatever that anger turns into. So we have this expression in connection with the wonderful behavior of the CIA and other security agencies. They use the term blowback to describe the fact that whenever they try to do something, it blows back in their face.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're using wrong energy. They're using negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
If they could use positive energy, it would become blow forward, because everything that you do would be multiplied in the direction that you want to go, even though you can't see exactly how.
So I'm understanding what you're talking about in terms of the inner sense of power of nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
What I am really curious about is, how do you think that it creates an effect, that kind of power? Why is nonviolence having an effect?
Well, in a funny way, nonviolence is having an effect the same way that violence has an effect. You know, Hannah Arendt said that violence is very powerful to change things, but it'll always change things to a more violent world.
Mm-hmm.
And nonviolence will do the opposite. Now, I'm going to get technical on you for a second here. And this is something that we really haven't known about until very recently. It was only discovered in the late 1980s in Italy. And that is the fact that in our central nervous system, in our brain in particular, there are specific neurons, the evolutionary purpose of which is to detect the intention of another person.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you're threatening me, which so far hasn't happened in our long friendship, but just for theoretical. Didn't work, big Nicky. let's say that it worked. And so, okay, this fear comes up, hypothetically, and I decide I'm not going to act on this fear. So it's not like I choose to be compassionate, I choose to be understanding, but just in that act, say, I'm not going to let this drive me, like what Martin Luther King said, I'm not going to let anyone bring me down so low as to make me hate him. Mm-hmm. It's an image of who I think I am and who I think we are and the unity that I believe in between us. I'm not going to yield to fear. Now you're expecting me to. You're projecting something into me which you expect is going to be reflected back as a fear reaction. But it isn't. Instead, whatever that turns into, compassion, understanding, I'm actually triggering that response in your brain.
Is it like the mirror neuron?
This is mirror neurons. This mm-hmm. is what I'm talking about. And I want to emphasize that the mirror neurons are just sort of the physical equipment that has been brought into being to facilitate a non-physical force, what Gandhi called a living power. Mm-hmm. So even, and King said this really beautifully, even among people who may not be here perceiving directly, visually, what happened, somehow, and this we have to believe, but we cannot yet explain, somehow that positive energy becomes part of the ambience mm-hmm. and it makes things better. And it's because we, as human beings, we understand each other so well on this primal level of, is it hate or love? Is it mm-hmm. is it unity or disunity? Everyone is built to pick that up. Mm-hmm. And when you reflect back a state of unity, it automatically registers. Now, I'm not saying, and this is important, especially for liability reasons, I'm not saying that it'll work.
Yes.
You know. You
and
know.
It's a big question of what it means for something to work.
Exactly.
It's and like, what are the consequences and yeah. at what cost?
And on what level?
Yeah.
Because I can do something that won't work in the sense that I end up getting hurt, I end up getting killed, I end up not convincing the other person. Still, that positive, constructive energy has gone out there into the onlookers and, I believe, into the world at large.
Yeah. You look at, I suddenly forget, Rachel Corrie.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, yeah. She died.
Yeah.
And the reverberation mm-hmm. of that
yeah.
was so much more powerful because it was that particular yeah. kind of death yeah. and not some and not, other kind yeah. of random death.
Not yeah. a random death, not a passively accepted kind of suffering, but something that I'm going to take this risk. In my book, Search for a Nonviolent Future, that was written before Rachel mm-hmm. died, I cite the example of Maximilian Kolbe, mm-hmm. now known as the Saint of Auschwitz, who,
yeah.
who volunteered to die
yeah.
in Auschwitz for another prisoner. And in Auschwitz, the mentality was, save your own life no matter what, you know, survive yeah. till we get rescued. And he just reversed that. He said, I'm going to lay down this thing which everybody is clinging to for the sake of a fellow human being.
Yeah.
And we now know that it literally hundreds, maybe thousands of people survived.
Because of acts of kindness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. I think this is about the time that we have here. Is there one last sentence that you want to say before we conclude?
I would like to encourage people to explore nonviolence. I think it's the one thing that is really going to rescue our situations individually, socially, internationally. If we can help you at the Meta Center for Nonviolence, we would be more than happy.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for coming. This
Very
was a
welcome.
Pleasure.
The skeleton is rotting in the grave.
We are back with Conflict Hotline. Remember, this is a call-in show, so if you want to call in, you can at 510-848-5483. We have a caller now. On the line is Joseph, and he has a situation called Joseph and the Trash.
Hello, Joseph. Would you tell us about the situation that you're calling about?
Oh, I'd be happy to. So I'm living in Berkeley this summer, and in the house that I'm living in, I was taking out the trash the other day, and I noticed that there were so many plastic containers and bottles and all of these these items that will go into waste dumps, and they're not biodegradable, and they're harmful for our environment. But I find that the only way that I can really get food for an inexpensive price, for a reasonable price, is to buy food that often comes in these packages. So my problem basically is that it is difficult, if so far impossible to my understanding, to live a conscious, nonviolent lifestyle if I need to purchasing the necessary items that I need to live.
So your issue is about what you can do in terms of your own consumption. It's not so much with the practices of your neighbors.
Well, it is both, because my neighbors downstairs also, I see, are having the same problem, if not larger. Mm-hmm. I recognize it is a community issue.
So what I am hearing is that you are really kind of like caught in a place of what can you as a single individual do?
Yes.
And I am somehow imagining that there is some different aspects of this dilemma for you, and I think that the way that we're thinking of playing this out in our studio is by sort of dividing you into two parts.
Okay.
And having a dialogue between the two parts. And so I want to check in with you to see if I get the parts accurately. I'm guessing that there is one part that is just in really deep despair. About the whole situation in terms of the food choices, the degradation of the environment, and all of that. Is that true?
That is true. I forgot to mention that I would like a garden, but I don't have access to a garden.
Yeah. And I'm hearing the other part, which is longing to find things that you as an individual can do so that you can at least live with a sense of integrity inside of you about your choices. Yeah?
Yeah, he said yes. Okay.
So we're going to pick these two voices to be in dialogue with each other and see what happens. And then we'll check in with you afterwards to see if what we play out here has any merit in terms of what is true inside of you. It might end up having merit or not. And so please stay on the line. And it might be tempting to participate, and I ask you to just witness and listen, and I'll check in with you at a certain point later. Is that okay with you?
That sounds great.
Thank you, Joseph. So, Ellie, will you be the voice of despair?
Sure.
And you will be the voice of integrity and wanting to find something that you can do as an individual.
Okay.
Let's see how you talk with each other. Yeah.
So, I just... When I see all that trash and the plastic wrappers and the boxes, and I see that some of them are mine, and that there's no way I can get food unless I buy it at the store, I feel really despairing. I don't know what to do.
And part of it is not just you. I'm guessing that there is also, you know, like you multiplied by 7 billion.
Yeah, I mean, I think about how, you know, I'm at least conscious of the impact all this stuff is making. And then there's all these people who I don't think even care or even aware of it. So it's like, if it's this hard for me and I'm aware, just multiplying it, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. So I want to say before we continue that this kind of raw despair is something that a lot of activists really try hard to stay away from because of concern that it will stop you from being able to take action or being effective or responding. And it, in my experience, it festers and turns into bitterness or anger or resentment, or for some people into apathy and burnout and resignation. And I want to check in with Joseph and just see if what I'm talking about resonates for you.
I think it does resonate, but I am not yet to that point. I still am very passionate about seeing what I can do.
Great. I'm delighted to hear that, and we're going to give voice to that in a moment. And because I want to make it helpful to you and to the audience, I am also thinking about how important it is to make room for the despair and to really be with it and find and refine the core of care that is inside of it. So we'll come back to this in a moment, and then I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm passionate. I want to do something. I mean, I'm just searching for what it is that I can do. You know, I want a garden, but I don't have room for a garden. So I'm just trying to think, you know, like there's got to be something I can do. You know, I've got to get out there and change the systems, or maybe I need to, you know, buy different things, or I don't know, but definitely don't get caught up in despair. Just, you know, do something.
So what happens to you when you hear the voice of despair?
Oh, I don't want to hear the voice of despair. I want to just focus on what I can do.
Mm-hmm. Does that match for you, Joseph?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so let's have you try to talk to each other and see what happens.
Well, I feel hurt that you don't want to hear from me.
We don't have time for your, you know, sitting around feeling bad about everything, you know? Sitting around feeling bad doesn't do anybody any good. We've got to get out there and do something.
But I'm depressed. I'm despairing. That's just the truth.
Is there kind of like a, what's the point? Why do anything? It's not going to amount to anything.
Yeah.
So, you are caught up in a potential, you know, little inner war. And the question is, are you willing to hear the despair so that whatever action you take comes from a place of wholeness, of not being afraid of any part of yourself?
It makes sense. I'm not feeling very willing, but it makes sense.
Okay, so let's see if there's willingness on this side instead. Hearing can happen from either side to either side. There's no rule that one side is supposed to listen first. How about you? Are you in a place where you are open to hearing and connecting with the passion that she has?
Honestly, no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling rejected, like as despair. I don't know if you want me to actually be despair. As despair, I feel like there's no room for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm feeling rejected.
And so then, what you're going to do, because it's kind of like odd to talk about parts inside acting out, and still, let's just kind of like run with this metaphor for another little bit. Anybody, including an inner part, when they're not feeling heard, are going to try to turn up the volume in order to be heard.
Yeah.
So what do you imagine you will end up doing?
Staying in bed. You know, not getting out of bed. It's just too overwhelming.
So, are you willing to try?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that maybe what would help you listen is some reassurance that nothing means you have to stop acting.
Right, that's it.
That's probably the fear, that
yes.
if you listen to the despair, you will stop acting.
Right.
And so what I want to say about that is that the despair holds inside of it a lot of care.
Mm.
It might even be a larger field of care than you are even holding right now.
Hmm.
So let's see what happens. Does that make it a little more appealing?
Okay. So what? Just try to mm-hmm. understand what's going on for the
yeah.
despair. It sounds like you're just feeling really hopeless and overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really sad about the situation and just not knowing what to do.
So
try to focus on what do you imagine this voice cares about? What's the big passion at the heart of that? It shouldn't be hard to find because it's you.
Yeah, it's caring for the earth and for all of life.
Yeah. And really wanting to like make a positive impact. And when I see my plastic wrapper in the trash, you know, with everybody else's, and I don't have a sense of how to not have that plastic wrapper be in the trash, I just feel so sad about that. I really want to make a positive difference, and I don't know how, because it just feels so big.
So just not knowing how. And
so when you're listening to despair, mm. which I would urge activists to do with and for each other
mm.
as much as possible, just so that all that energy is released and opened up to find the care, what is needed
mm.
is to first make room for the despair to just be
mm.
and really vigilantly look for what's the dream in the name of which
mm.
the despair is kind of like sitting there. What's the fundamental dream that you're hearing it here? And
that,
keep reflecting that.
That we can figure out some way to turn this around, I mm. guess, that we can think of something that we could do that would really help the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like really help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see that in this, as you hear that, that's exactly what
exactly.
you want.
Exactly, yeah.
And so instead of having to put so much energy into fending it off and like putting it down and capping it and putting a lid on it, you can actually have all this energy mobilized into what you're trying to do.
Hmm. Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I guess I want to check in with this part and see, are you feeling more mobilized, actually?
More mobilized?
Or
I mean, I feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel more connected to you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's not there yet.
Okay.
It happens when you give it time. All of these mm-hmm. things, I mean, the same thing happened, you know, like in the interview with Michael, the same thing comes up. You sow seeds.
Mm-hmm.
The change doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
The overnight change doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's that you create systems and foundations that allow for things to build over time. And right now you're building a relationship
mm-hmm.
that will let this aspect of you relax a little because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's hard relaxes. Is that true? Are you feeling a little more relaxed?
Yeah, totally. And more present. And more open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if now you can try to hear
yeah.
what this one has to say.
I do. I feel open to that. I'm curious, actually.
Yeah, I just feel the passion and the desire to search, you know, to just not rest until we figure out some action.
Mm-hmm. Like you really want to do something.
Yeah. And not get discouraged.
Mm-hmm. Is
yeah.
it like you're you're afraid of getting discouraged because you so much want to act so that you can actually make an impact?
Yeah, I want to keep the faith or something, keep my passion alive.
I'm also wondering one more thing. Is it okay if I step in here? I'm getting a sense that you are willing to take action even if you don't know 100% for sure that it will have an effect, just to try things out.
Just to do something.
And so the fear is that, you know, all this despair about, you know, nothing is going to work, you're not going to do anything, and you would rather do something even if it's not the perfect thing.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that?
It wouldn't be my approach.
Yeah.
But there's something a little exciting actually about that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we don't have to do it right. We just want to just do something.
Mm-hmm. I want to check in with Joseph because we have only a few minutes before the wrap up of the show. And Joseph, I'm curious how this was for you to listen to.
You know, I felt a reshift of energy towards productive ideas for doing some sort of action when I gave this space for this despair. Almost, I felt the muscles in my lower back relax, even the physical.
Wow.
So it was a very thought out process that I appreciate, and it resonates deep with what I am thinking.
Thank you. I'm really touched that what we were doing here, you know, far away from you without seeing you, is still finding some truth that helps you at such a visceral cellular level. Is there anything else you want to say as a final word?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
He didn't hear you.
Oh, is there any last thing that you want to say before we close?
Well, I would like to say that now I feel a little bit more positive energy for talking with friends about this and talking with neighbors and researching more and understanding more, and I have all to think. Thank my family and friends, and thank you for going through this process.
Thank you.
You know, I'm also thinking that this despair part can have power over the wanting to do part as well. Like, it made me nervous a little because I can imagine you like pulling her to bed unless you're heard.
Unless I'm heard.
Yes.
Yeah, once I was heard, I was like, okay, you know, tell me what you want to say.
Yeah.
But if I wasn't heard, I'm like not open at all. Yeah.
Anything you want to say before we close this scenario?
I felt like once I stopped fighting this part and really opened up and listened, I felt like, oh yes, of course, we care about the same things. We don't have to waste this energy sort of fighting.
Yeah. And from over here, it was just very sweet to see how the connection was being built and more things almost could be said by either of you.
Yeah.
As you were converging in some way.
The trick for me would be to remember to take that energy of having both of the sides be important when we're going to go have those conversations with other people as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing that all of us have that struggle in us.
Yeah. There are those despair days.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, I'm guessing it'll be, you know, use the same, welcome the despair to the other people too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So be it's almost like make room for another person's despair so that they can also feel that opening of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Be strong enough inside ourselves and confident that then we can be that kind of agent of change, make room for other people to grow.
Yeah. Great.
Okay.
So we're coming to the end of our time together. And I'm particularly touched by this last moment of creating space for the struggle in all of us. So
This is the end of our show. If you liked what you saw today and are moved to want to learn these tools, call our organization, Bay Area Nonviolent Communication, or look at our website for training opportunities with me and others. Our contact information is repeated at the end of this program. Also, we want to hear your feedback. We continue to experiment with the format and the content of the show each month. So please send us your comments and scenarios. Send them to conflicthotline@baynbc.org. Before we go, we want to thank everyone here, our role players, Ali and Lucy, our conflict coach, Mickey, the crew who is all volunteer, and the production staff. Our biggest gratitude goes to the people who called in and sent in their scenarios that made our show rich and meaningful, and I hope you can continue to do that. We hope you'll join us again next month on September 2nd at 7:30 for another hour of Conflict Hotline. Until then, I'm Sigal Shoham. I hope to see you. Good night from Conflict Hotline.
Turn heaven from hell. Together we can turn heaven.